flies did carry a dose which was infective to a bird up to 4 days. So this helped us determine that yes, indeed, flies can carry exotic Newcastle disease virus. Therefore, we really need to look into fly control when dealing with exotic Newcastle disease virus in a poultry facility. So I would like to conclude by saying that today many techniques are available. We need to be very careful. We need to know about the objectives in mind and then look for a suitable technique to isolate the virus. With that, I would stop and take any questions. Thank you.
We do have time for that. Thank you. There's time for a question or two if you would like to ask a question. I have one actually. The HAHI process, the whole thing is very laborious, obviously. I remember you doing that.
Yes.
The HAHI part of that, what's the value in those tests? Is it strictly, I know there's a lot of types of these viruses. Is that the point of it? Is it a typing assay?
Yes, it's kind of a typing assay as well as it tells us about the titer, the dilution, the lowest dilution at which the virus could be positive.
Okay, I was thinking perhaps you could replace that with a PCR step, but unless you're doing real-time PCR, you shouldn't get the
concentration. Yes, you wouldn't get the concentration. Yes, that was around, it was less than, just less than one EID 50. That was our limit, and that's when we needed our second passage. Yes.
I have a question. Did you ever find out where the flies are carrying the virus? Is it just a mechanical transmission, or if they actually get it systematically in their body?
That's a good question. We did find the virus to reside in the gut of the flies too, but we cannot really pinpoint and say exactly which part. It could also be a mechanical vector. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Swati. I want to acknowledge my co-author Roger Vargas at USDA ARS. He was here at the meeting and left this morning, and we've been working on a whole series of different projects involving fruit fly control and eradication programs in Hawaii, which has bearing on other states as well, like California and Florida. And I guess the question is, why soil insecticides? To be very honest with you, I wasn't really interested in doing this, but it's important, and so I'll explain. One of the components of eradication in California is the application of diazinon under orchards to get rid of the larvae in the soil and the pupal stage, and if adults emerge from the soil, they pick up insecticide and die. And diazinon has been the insecticide of choice, and I wasn't really sure what that was based on because I never really could find some really good field studies showing that, but someone must have done it, because as you'll see, what we found out is it's an incredibly good insecticide, but the problem is it's being banned. A lot of the uses are being banned, and it's going to eventually disappear for use as a soil treatment for fruit fly eradication in California. So that's why we started evaluating other products. And so in this study, what we did was we looked at a series of products and then compared their efficacy to diazinon.
Well, I'm going to just go right into this. I'm going to be talking about another aspect of this study that has to do with the introducing some classical biological control agents and parasitoids. And I'm here, I'm kind of wondering why I ended up in this section here, but maybe you're wondering why I'm in this section since I'm doing classical biocontrol. But Sean insisted that we do this presentation in a crop pest management section, and I wanted to follow this talk since I knew he'd do a nice introduction to the biology of ligus and whatnot, and I could just move right in to other aspects of the parasitoid. So, yeah, I'm going to be, myself and others have been introducing some parasitoids for ligus control across the country and other parts of, and as well as in Canada. I'm focusing on, this talk will just touch briefly on the Central Valley of California, and then more importantly on the strawberry system on the Central Coast, where I'm working with Sean. So I'll be talking about a little bit about Central California, and then the releases on the Central Coast, and So why release these? Why introduce parasitoids into for control of colitis? Well, in survey work that I've done and that's been done years ago, going back to the 60s, there's no specific parasitoids that attack colitis in Central California. And that's also true for strawberries on the Central Coast, but I did find a native parasitoid that does enter the system early in the season, but it drops out. It's pretty non-functional for the remainder of the season. It really has no impact in terms of controlling colitis in late season in the strawberries. So that's the big motivating factor. These are the two parasitoids that I've worked with. They're braconids in the genus Peristenis. One's Peristenis diagnutus and one's Peristenis relictus, formerly called Stygicus. Here you see the San Joaquin Valley, just to orient you, the black circle encircles the San Joaquin Valley, and then the area where Sean's been working and I've been working is the Central Coast, circled in green. And I'm just going to touch on the results of my releases starting back in 1998. And in the Central California, in the very center part, Fresno and Bakersfield down in this area, basically the releases failed. But we're far more successful in a plot of alfalfa that I manage personally that's in the Sacramento area. And based on that success, I decided to go ahead and see if we can get these things established on the Central Coast. So, hail on the successful establishment of these Peristenis species in Sacramento. This is a graph showing the population trends in the parasite, which is the black line, and in Lycus, which are the green bars. This is the plot of alfalfa that we made the releases into, which is in an industrial area in the northern part of the city of Sacramento. So it's not directly in an agricultural area. The reason for the rise in the colitis population during the first number of years when I was doing the releases, I stopped the releases right here, has to do with the fact it's just a little island of alfalfa in a city, and this increase reflects the buildup of the population, the natural buildup of the colitis population, a very, very succulent alfalfa field, and also migration. And the parasites continue to track the increase in the colitis numbers, increasing in parasitism over the years. What I show are the peak values for each year. And they peaked in about 2004, and now they're starting to drop a little bit, though it's bouncing up. And you notice that the colitis population has plummeted from a high of 20 nymphs per sweep down to this last summer of one nymph per sweep in that plot of alfalfa. And I would attribute most of this drop in the population due to a new source of mortality on the colitis nymphs, which is from the parasites. So based on this, I moved to